Thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon. I'm Anthony Viorst, and I represent Judith Rotz in this appeal. Your Honors, just a brief recitation of the facts, if I may. On August 26th of 2010, the defendant filed a motion for cost bond. August 31st, judge ordered the cost bond by simply signing the order submitted by the defendant. Within 3 days, there was email contact between my office and Ms. Rotz, and Ms. Rotz.
Interrupting, counsel, but was there any 5 day, did the plaintiff file a response to the motion that was filed on August 26th?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think it's pretty much mandatory to file, if they ask for an out-of-state plaintiff to post a cost bond, I think essentially we have to post it once the order is issued. So we did not respond to that. And we did not really oppose it. We weren't indigent. So other than that, I really don't think there's any grounds to oppose it. Within 3 days, you know, steps are being taken. She's contacting a bonds person, a civil bonds person here in Colorado, going through that process of posting collateral, doing what she needs to do to get that done.
So court's order specified the amount of the bond. Correct?
It did.
And it specified the time within which it should have been filed, right? The 14 days?
It did.
Okay.
That's correct. We acknowledge that, Your Honor. And she didn't file it within that time frame.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but you didn't object to the time or the amount, right?
Did not. We did not. We thought we could get it done in the time frame. And my client, you know, I left my client to do it because they had to post the money. And they tried from out of state to get that done within the 14 days, and they were making diligent efforts, as reflected in the email string that I provided to the trial court, and they simply didn't get it done in time. And they did it almost, they did it within 17 days, but then my client inadvertently sent the bond, the signed bond, to the bonds person instead of to my office. She got it done.
Did you notify the other side that there was some impediments to getting the bond?
I didn't, Your Honor. And there is
did
a
not?
I did not.
Okay.
There is a reference to my being in trial, and I'm not using that as an excuse, but I was in a two-week trial in Adams County, and so I did not do that.
Nor did you file a motion for additional time to post the bond?
I did not.
Okay.
I acknowledge that as well, Your Honor.
Okay.
You know, the bond was supposed to be filed by the 14th. Motion to dismiss was filed on the 22nd. And in that response, Your Honor, I simply said, because the motion simply said there's been no bond filed. And I just wrote back the next day, the 23rd, and I said the bond's now been filed. And so we didn't really get into the merits of the issue at that time of whether a late filed bond would be appropriate, because the only issue in the motion was that the bond had not been filed. So 23rd, I get the bond from the bonds person. And I immediately filed along with a response. Yes, I mean, you know, I acknowledge that we did not object to the bond. We did not file a motion to post it late. I acknowledge those things, Your Honors. And if that merits dismissal of my case, so be it. But frankly, Your Honors, we don't think it does. We simply don't think it does, because. You know, again, I would have put all this in my initial response to the motion, but I didn't. But because the motion only talked about the non-filing, I didn't do that. When the case was dismissed on the 18th of November, I immediately filed a motion to reconsider, in which I laid out all the facts I'm telling Your Honors about the diligent efforts my client made, about posting the bond, sending the bond to the bonds person instead of to me, that I filed it immediately upon receipt.
Counsel, what are we supposed to do statutory interpretation standpoint when the statute 1316.102 talks about the neglect, if a non-resident plaintiff neglects to file such an instrument, the bond, then the court on motion shall dismiss the suit? Why shouldn't we presume that the legislature meant what it said, that it shall be dismissed?
Well, I mean, that's obviously the issue in question, Your Honor, and I think it's a good one. And I guess I would have a layered response to that. The first is that I believe that the word neglects, as contained in that statute, which is, you know, it's an old statute, And I believe that it really is synonymous with the word fails. So really, I think they talk there. So really, they're saying if the bond isn't filed, if the plaintiff, out-of-state plaintiff, either fails or refuses, then the case should be dismissed. The statute doesn't really address a late-filed bond. And it wasn't, I don't think, addressing that when the statute was promulgated initially. So I'd ask the court to find that, you know, neglect as found in the statute does not really mean neglect as we interpret that term today. But even if we're, so, but I suppose that if we are to...
If it means fails, what does refuses mean?
Well, fails means didn't do it, and refuses means actually, like, tells the court I'm not good.
Excuse me, so, you're saying that it means fails?
Yeah, that's how the statute, how that word should be read as the statute was initially promulgated. But...
Well, let me just interrupt you. The Supreme Court in Walcott, which was decided in 1996, said if the General Assembly intended that failure to file a cost bond, regardless of the reason, would mandate dismissal, it would not have predicated dismissal specifically on whether a plaintiff neglects or refuses. So in that case,
okay,
they were saying it's different than failure.
Then if that's the way the Supreme Court has interpreted that word, then I would obviously defer to them.
And how does that affect your situation, whether it's fail or neglectful or which?
Well, because she did file it. I mean, so she didn't. So she didn't fail to file it, but she did arguably neglect, you know, to get it filed in time. But Your Honor's also, you know, so if you want to look at sort of, if you want to have a strict construction, I suppose, if you want to interpret neglect strictly and shall strictly, then you know, I think we lose. Okay, but I would first of all direct your attention to Hyken, which I believe supports my position, because Hyken says you can dismiss a bond for multiple failures to, it says a non-resident plaintiff's multiple failures to file a cost bond could constitute neglect. So I don't think at least the Supreme Court in Hyken believed that filing 9 days late, and again, we're talking about 9 days late, Your Honors. I don't believe the Supreme Court in Hyken anticipated that a 9-day late filing would merit a dismissal. They said multiple failures. What I said in my opening brief was multiple failures or an unduly lengthy delay, not a 9-day delay. But in addition, Your Honors, you know, to the extent that there's any confusion about this, I'm going to ask this court to give serious consideration to the sentence directly above the sentence that they rely upon. Because if you're going to go for statutory interpretation, then you have to, you know, you have to do a full statutory interpretation. Full statutory interpretation. And the sentence right above that says, to ensure that access to the courts is not unreasonably denied, comma, a court shall not require an instrument in writing for the payment of costs of suit in excess of $5,000. And then it goes on to say, if the non-resident plaintiff neglects or refuses, on or before the day in such will named to file such instrument, the court on motion shall dismiss the suit. So, the second to last sentence, the penultimate sentence, if you will, I ask this court to find reflects a legislative intent not to deny, and it says, it doesn't, we don't even need to really read between the lines here, because it says to ensure access to the court is not unreasonably denied. So if you're telling me a 9-day delay in filing the cost bond is not an unreasonable denial of access to the courts, then I'm going to respectfully disagree.
I ask you, are you arguing that the court erred because it abused its discretion, or are you arguing that the court erred because it held that it didn't have any discretion?
Well, that's an issue between the two of us, but I firmly believe that the court's ruling indicates that an interpretation of law that a late filed cost bond merits or mandates dismissal. That's the court's ruling, because when I filed my motion to reconsider and I set forth all these factors meriting a reconsideration of the dismissal, the court said no, the statute, it was one line order, the statute and Heitken mandate dismissal.
There's no discretion.
He said, basically he said there was no discretion.
The trial judge held there was no discretion.
He did.
Your argument to us is, to the contrary, he had discretion.
He had discretion. He didn't exercise it.
And then we would remand the case under your theory to direct him to exercise his discretion.
I would ask the court to find as a matter of law that 9-day delay under these circumstances is is inconsistent with dismissal, an order of dismissal.
But the court has discretion to do it.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, for the purpose of judicial economy. But you know what? I wouldn't quibble with a remand either. Okay. What I'm asking the court to find anyway is that the law is not that a 9-day late filed cost bond mandates dismissal. I don't believe that's the law. And I believe that because of Heitken. I believe that because of the sentence right above the sentence that they rely upon. I believe that because of the many, many cases I cited in my opening brief, including Corpus Juris Secundum, a legal encyclopedia that's relied upon nationwide, which supports my position. And, you know, there's no other state in the union that I'm aware of that would take the position that the defendant is asking this court to take in this case.
How do you explain the sentence in Heitken, which is at page 511 of the decision, it's subparagraph 9 under the West system? Mm-hmm. Under the statute, the court has no discretion regarding the filing of a cost bond, and dismissal for failure to do so is mandatory.
Well, again, that's where we get into the fails versus neglects. And they were talking about failure in Heitken, Your Honor. And Heitken was a failure to file case. They didn't file. They didn't file. They never filed in Heitken. And that's a different situation. And Heitken goes on to talk about a situation where a late filed cost bond might merit dismissal. Heitken suggests that there is discretion because they say a non-resident plaintiff's multiple failures to file a cost bond could constitute neglect. I mean, so they're, you know, they're talking about a potential for discretion as to that issue. So I reserve the remainder of my time if there's no other questions at this juncture. Thank you.
Please, of course. All right. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Barton Maxwell, attorney registration number 18913. I represent the Hyatt Corporation. I believe there are three points to address central to this issue. One, it was just touched on, abuse of discretion, the standard of review in the case. The second point is what is neglect under the terms of the statute 1360.102. And the third point is mandatory dismissal. In the statute. Going to the standard of review, that was clearly addressed in the Heitken versus Wake case, where it states that the Supreme Court in Walcott did not address the standard of review, but Heitken versus Wake did. It stated on page 510, dismissals under 1316-102 are reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard. So I believe that sets the standard for this court's review of the matter.
The court believed that it had no discretion. The trial.
That's correct. And that's my next point that I wanted to raise. The discretion standard applies to the district court's determination of whether or not there was neglect or refusal to issue the cost bond or file a cost bond. The statute clearly states there is no discretion if, upon motion, the party has not filed the cost bond, and then the defendant or other party files a motion, the court is under no discretion at that point. The court shall dismiss the suit. And that's what the district court did in this case. We had a September 14, 2010 deadline to file a cost bond. As the court questioned, there was no extension, no contact, no attempt to extend that deadline. And there was no cost bond filed prior to the court's order. Under the statute, once that order is issued and you have a deadline, if a party files a motion to dismiss, the court shall, upon motion, dismiss the suit.
Saying with respect to a late filed cost bond, the trial court has no discretion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yet Heitken says, at page 510, we conclude that the trial court has discretion to determine whether a plaintiff's delay in filing a cost bond is a result of neglect or refusal.
That's correct, Your Honor. So the court does have discretion to determine if there was neglect or refusal.
So is that discretion?
Excuse me.
Yeah, it did, Your Honor. It had evidence to determine whether or not there was neglect. Number one, there was no filing within that time frame. Number two, there was no extension filed within that time frame. Number three, there was a motion to dismiss filed after the deadline, prior to the parties filing a cost bond. And then the fourth issue that the court noted in its order was that plaintiff's counsel had indicated he was preoccupied with another trial and simply didn't file the order on time.
Are you suggesting that in this order of November 18th, there's a finding that there was what we would call inexcusable neglect, or neglect that resulted in non-compliance with the statute? I'd like to see where you think that finding is made. Just the language you refer to, counsel has offered no argument why this should excuse the delay?
Well, Your Honor, under Hyken versus Wake, the court states that, in fact, the statute makes specifically excludes the possibility of excusable neglect. Now, if there is a finding of neglect or refusal, the court is mandated to dismiss the case. That's clear under the statute. What Hyken versus Wake did was address what were the terms of neglect in this case. And the terms in that case were there had been multiple requests for extension of time without a filing of a bond. And the court ultimately, on the fourth motion for extension, said, I'm dismissing the case. And the Court of Appeals, after that, considered, yes, in reading the statute, I find that there was neglect on the party, and that under the terms of the statute, it mandated dismissal. And the court then held that was not an abuse of discretion in that case for the district court to find neglect.
What was the finding of the court?
Well, I'm not sure that the court specifically states in the order, here are my findings of neglect. But it does note in its analysis and background section the elements that go into that determination. The fact that there was no bond filed within that time. There was no extension filed. The court also mentioned that counsel had been unable to file it in the time because he'd been involved in a 9-day trial. So those were all elements going into the court's determination that this is why it wasn't filed within those 9 days. It did not specifically state in the order that I find neglect for these reasons that it wasn't filed within this time. But the filings in this case, as well as the court's order, support the finding that there was neglect under the terms of the statute. And as the court noted in the Heitken versus Wake, absent circumstances of indigency or a waiver of the cost bond, the case shall be dismissed.
Counsel, but that's contrary to what the Supreme Court said in Walcott, isn't it? I mean, how do you reconcile that with Walcott, which makes it very clear that inability to fail for any reason does not constitute neglect?
Well, Your Honor, I'm trying to find that particular part of the holding.
Page 166. Under headnote 5, inability to obtain a cost bond does not equate to the neglect or refusal to pay such a bond. The General Assembly intended that failure to file a cost bond, regardless of the reason, would mandate dismissal, would not have predicated dismissal specifically on whether a plaintiff neglects or refuses.
That's correct, Your Honor. It allowed for neglect or refusal. So we don't have evidence that the plaintiff simply refused.
You're saying that neglect has to be indigency only? Am I reading you?
Under Hyken versus Wake, it states that indigency or waiver of bond would be the excuses for not filing the cost bond timely, but the excuse is neglect.
Actual holding in Hyken is that the court did not abuse its discretion after allowing several extensions of time. And there was no suggestion that granting those extensions of time was an abuse of discretion, but that only after those several extensions of time had expired, it said the court did not abuse its discretion in dismissing the case. It didn't say the court was mandated to dismiss the case. It just said the court didn't abuse its discretion in dismissing the case, right?
That's correct. And because it was going back to the appellate court's opinion that the district court had found evidence of neglect and not filing the cost bond. Therefore, once there was a finding of neglect by the district court, the court was mandated to dismiss the case. And that's where the abuse of discretion standard comes in.
No, I'm talking about the Heitken decision, not the trial court.
Yes, I am too, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, I think we've already addressed the second point that we have here. Counsel for the appellant also mentioned that the Heitken case supported his position that there have to be multiple failures or an undue delay. And I respectfully disagree that that's not what Heitken says. It goes back to what we were just discussing, that here's an example of neglect that was properly dismissed by the district court. There were multiple extensions of time in that case, and the plaintiff didn't file it. That's not the only way that a cause bond is dismissed or the only finding of neglect. If you go back to the clear language of the statute, if you have an order and a cause bond is not filed within the time of that order, on motion, the court shall then dismiss the suit. That's the clear language of the statute. And also direct the court's attention to the...
Why didn't the court in Heitken time pass the... I understand there's language. I mean, there's a little bit in there for both of you. I understand that. But it seems to be ultimately exercised. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
In this case, the court said that
it did not have discretion to dismiss the case upon a finding of neglect. That's the holding of Heitken, that the discretion standard applies to whether or not, under the statute, let's go back to the language of the statute. If the non-resident plaintiff, this is 1316.102, the last sentence, if the non-resident plaintiff neglects or refuses on or before the day in such rule named to file such instrument, the court on motion shall dismiss the suit. Now, the court in Heitken, the issue in Heitken was whether or not there was neglect. And that's the issue that we have in this case.
So in Heitken, just didn't file it. There wasn't refusal here. She did file it. All we're dealing with here is neglect. Right.
Well, I suppose the Court of Appeals in Heitken could have considered that, but I believe the Court of Appeals in Heitken considered neglect as the issue in the case, and not simply that the plaintiff had refused. So I don't believe we have that issue in this case of refusal. It's a question of whether or not there's neglect and whether or not the district court abused its discretion in considering that there was neglect and then dismissing the case.
That's your position, is that the second paragraph of the order in this case, which starts with the plaintiff did not file a cause bond until September 23rd, that paragraph constitutes a finding of neglect. I gather that's your position.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear part of that.
Your position is the last paragraph of this order, page 2 of the order, that starts with plaintiff here did not file the cause bond until September 23rd. Your position is this paragraph as a whole constitutes an exercise of discretion by the court and a finding of neglect under the statute.
Yes, I would say that paragraph, as well as statements in the background section, noting that the plaintiff had obtained a cause bond by September 17, and it was not filed prior to the September 14 date, and also a statement that appellant's counsel had been unable to file it at that time because he had a 9-day jury trial in Adams County. So those are all considerations that were offered by the district court. And then ultimately, the district court determined, based on my findings of neglect, the court shall dismiss the suit, following the mandatory nature of the statute. I also want to address one other point that was brought up by appellant. There was a brief reference to opinions cited from other jurisdictions and corpus juris secundum. Those cases do not apply in this case, respectfully. Those are out-of-state cases. Here we have a statute with definitive language that a case shall be dismissed if cause bond is not filed by the day of the order, and opinions supporting that case law. I respectfully submit that Heitken versus Wake does support that opinion, and I would also draw the court's attention to Nguyen versus Swedish Medical Center. It's 890 P. 2nd, 255. It's cited in Appellee's brief. In that case, the plaintiff, in a medical malpractice action, filed a lawsuit The defendant filed a motion for cost bond. The court entered an order for cost bond, and the court found that no cost bond was filed prior to the deadline of that order and dismissed the case. Now, ultimately, that case was decided on a plaintiff's secondary argument that after refiling the suit, the plaintiff tried to argue that that revived a statute of limitations claim. But that's not particularly relevant to this case, but the point is, in Nguyen versus Swedish Medical Center, it's exactly what happened here. Cost bond was not filed within the time of the order, and the case was dismissed. We ask that the court affirm the district court's finding in this matter. Thank you.
I understand the court's original order setting at 14 days was really an order that was drafted by your defense counsel.
That's correct.
So the 14 days.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
Your Honor, is that about 3 minutes and 28 seconds?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to clarify the factual background, if I could. The bond was posted on 17 days after the order, the bond was executed 17 days after the order. It was signed by the client, but it was sent to the bonds person, and that was the problem. So what we said in our response when they said no bond was filed in their initial motion, we said, what we were trying to say is that it was executed, but it was sent to the bonds person. So that's why it would have only been like 3 days late, but it was sent to the bonds person. It didn't get to us till the 23rd.
Is that neglect?
If she sent it to the wrong place, it could be. It could be. She's not a lawyer. I couldn't say definitively that it's not. What I can say is I don't believe that it really matters if it gets filed within 9 days. That's our position. I would note that the
statute uses the word neglect to sort of go back to that. I mean, if you didn't, but if you concede it's neglect, then the statute has a remedy for that, doesn't it? It shall be dismissed.
Neglect is an undue delay, as I interpret the statute. If you believe neglect is any delay that results from neglect, like sending it to the wrong place, then you're right. But I believe neglect means undue delay as interpreted by the courts. So just to clarify, then we as soon as we got that bond, we filed it immediately. So to the extent that Judge Hood's order relies on initially, his initial order said, well, counsel says in his response that the bond, he basically sat on the bond for 6 days. But that's not what we did. As soon as we got it, we filed it, but we just didn't have it during that 6-day period. So his initial order was wrong. And so to the extent that he made a neglect finding, it was wrong. And that's why when I filed my motion to reconsider, I said, Judge, here's what really happened. And I sent in all this documentary evidence, like a big pile of it. And at that point, he said, no, I can't even consider this. The statute precludes it. So he found as a matter of law, Your Honors, that he couldn't consider it because the bond was late. And that's simply a misinterpretation of the law. The defendant is asking this court to engage in an interpretation of the law that's inconsistent with the statute. And I believe this court can find that because, again, the sentence right above it says we want to ensure access to the courts of non-resident plaintiffs. So it's inconsistent with the statute. It's inconsistent with Hyken. It's inconsistent with out-of-state law. It's inconsistent with CJS. And, Judge, it's inconsistent with public policy. There are myriad cases saying the Colorado law favors determination of cases on their merits. That's what Colorado law favors, okay? They are asking for a hyper-technical interpretation of the law that would kick my client out of court based on a 9-day delay when she sent the bond to the wrong office. And that is not consistent with Colorado law, which favors determination of cases on their merits. So for all those reasons, Colorado law, Colorado statute, out-of-state law, out-of-state encyclopedias, and finally, public policy, Your Honors. We ask this court to reverse the trial court's determination. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be submitted, and we will issue an opinion in due course.